So we are spending 5 weeks talking about the vow that we take when we become members of the church, to support the church with our prayers, our presence, our gifts, our service, and our witness. Now, these past few weeks have been a little different. I haven't been up here much talking to you, so I feel like I got a lot to cram in today, so I'll do the best that I can. But last Sunday was a great Sunday. It was Children and Youth Sunday. And we talked about service, and some of our youth got up and talked about their mission trip from this past summer. Julia, as always, did a wonderful sermon. It was a great Sunday. The Sunday before that was a membership Sunday. We had several folks join the church, and the theme that day was witness, and each one who joined shared a little bit about their journey of faith and what it meant coming to Blakemore and why they are involved here at Blakemore and what the community here means to them. And that was a glorious Sunday as well. And then the Sunday before was Blakemore Children's Center Sunday. We had a ton of families here from the Children's Center, and we talked about presence. I told the story of the Good Shepherd who was with the sheep. But today is really like the first real sermon in this series. So again, I'm going to try to cram it in as much as I can. But today we are talking about gifts. Gifts. Prayers, presence, gifts, service, and witness. But before we do that, let's reflect a little bit on the series itself and the word vow, because that's what we've called this series, the membership vow that we take. So what is a vow? A vow is a solemn promise. You can kind of think of promises in different levels. There's just kind of your normal everyday promise, like I promise I'll do this or that. And then you may remember this from a kid, from being a kid. Danny, let's see if you remember. Do you remember pinky promises? Yeah, where you stick your pinky out and you make a promise, right? Yeah, okay. So pinky promise is like the next level of promise after just a regular promise, right? All right, then there are pledges that we make, like the Pledge of Allegiance and those kinds of things. That's even more serious, more solemn. But then you get to oaths and to vows, which are the most serious, the most important kind of promises that we make. You might take an oath of office if you're elected to a position. You might take an oath if you're testifying in court. Oaths are usually kind of time limited. They're specific to an event or an office that you might hold. But vows are typically a promise that you will behave or live in a certain way in perpetuity for the rest of your life. Marriage vows, of course, come to mind when we say that word. When you pledge yourself to someone else to be faithful and true and to love and support and cherish that person in sickness and in health and through all the things that you might encounter together. When I was ordained, I took a vow to serve in the church. Some folks join certain orders, and they might take a vow of chastity, a vow of poverty, other kinds of specific vows. And then there are other kinds of vows, vows of revenge, where someone has done something to you, and you vow to not rest until you get back at them, or right or wrong, or whatever it might be. And I want to show a quick video clip about one of those kinds of vows. One of my favorite movies is The Princess Bride. Many of you may be familiar with it. One of the characters in the movie is named Inigo Montoya. And when he's a child, his father is killed. And so he dedicates his life to avenging his father's death. So this is a little kind of a trailer that somebody put together about that journey that he takes.
I do not mean to pry, but you don't by any chance happen to have 6 fingers on your right hand? My father was slaughtered by a 6-fingered man.
There's a Spaniard giving us some trouble.
Will you give him some trouble?
I think no man in a century will suffer as greatly as you will.
You have 6 fingers on your right hand. Someone was looking for you.
If you're familiar with the movie, you know that when he's a child, his father is killed by the 6-fingered man. And so he devotes his life to studying swordplay, to becoming the best swordsman that he could ever possibly be, and to seeking after this six-fingered man and taking revenge upon him. Spoiler alert, the movie's been out for like 30 years, so I think I'm okay sharing this. Towards the end of the movie, he finds the man, and it looks like he's going to be defeated. He's going to lose this duel, but he comes back almost from the dead and defeats him and avenges his father. He took a vow. He dedicated his life to this thing. And we see the culmination of that in the movie. So what about us? As Christians, as members of Blakemore United Methodist Church, we take a vow to support the church, to support the work of Christ through our prayers, our presence, our gifts, our service, and our witness. And together, we work to live out that vow. So let's talk about gifts this morning. I think it's probably the one that that we get confused about the most. Because when we hear gifts, we almost automatically think of money, don't we? When we talk about gifts in the church, we think about giving money. And that certainly is part of it, but as Aaron shared in the children's message, it's much more than that as well. But giving money is important. It's part of what we need to do to support the work and the life and the ministry of our church. The Bible, especially in the Old Testament, talks about giving the first fruits of what we have. The church has taken up the tradition of tithing, giving the first 10% of your income to the church and to other work of God to support that ministry, to help those who are in need, to further God's work in the world. And so that is what we encourage folks to do. And there are several folks in our church who do just that, who take the first 10% of everything that they earn and they give it to the church or to other ministries. A few weeks ago, Phil Schrader was here when we were talking about fear back in October. And he said that people have a lot of fear around giving. Now, there are kind of three categories of things we do with our money. We can spend it, we can save it, and we can share it. And he says, ideally, as Christians, we should share first, but that often we save the sharing for last, and we share just what's left over. But God calls us to share of our first fruits, to give that first bit to the work of God in the world. Now, many of us are maybe weren't raised in the church or we're not used to that kind of practice. And so to go from whatever we're doing to giving 10%, that's quite a leap. And so when folks come to me asking about that, I encourage them to take baby steps in that direction. Even as a church, we are doing a similar kind of thing. Many of you are familiar with the term apportionments. Apportionments are what the Global United Methodist Church asks us, our congregation, to give to support ministry all across our conference and across the world. And we, as Blakemore, are asked to give a little over $50,000 per year to support this ministry all over the world. In my first year, we were nowhere near to being able to accomplish that. And so we set a goal to increase in increments each year. So we gave $10,000 in 2015. Last year, we gave $20,000. This year, we're on pace to give $30,000. We've budgeted next year to give 40, and then hopefully in 2019 we'll be able to give the full amount. But practically, it just wouldn't work for us to go from a very small amount to $50,000 in 1 year. But if we take it slow and if we trust, we can get there. We can do it. And so it is with our own giving as well. If you don't give close to 10%, that's okay. Start where you are and set a goal each year. 2%. Then 3%, then 4%, then 6%, then 8%. Or maybe if you get a cost of living increase in your salary, well, just dedicate it to the church each year and live on what you're already used to living on. But eventually, we can get to that place where we are giving as God has called us to. But giving to the church is important because it enables the church to do its work and its ministry. The heat, which is working very well this morning, wouldn't be on if folks didn't give to the church. Myself and the other staff, we wouldn't have salaries, wouldn't be able to support ourselves without your giving to the church. Miriam's Promise wouldn't get money if people didn't give to the church. Another way to think of it is that every dollar that you give to the church goes to do all of these things. It goes to pay our electric bill. It goes to support our staff. It goes to support an intern every summer with Project Transformation. It goes to support Miriam's Promise and the Wesley Foundations at Vanderbilt and all the other places in Middle Tennessee. It goes to support camping ministry. And it goes to support ministries of justice and mercy all over the world. Every dollar that you give to Blakemore United Methodist Church does that. What an amazing thing. But gifts is not just about money. It's about other things that we give as well. The Bible talks about spiritual gifts. And as United Methodists, we believe that when the Spirit comes to live inside of us, that Spirit gives each of us a gift or multiple gifts that are to be used for God's good work in the world. That God breathes into us these gifts. And we are called to share them and to use them to show light and mercy and compassion. And so we have a listing of some of those gifts that I've identified. I don't think that's an exhaustive list. And then there are other gifts as well, not spiritual gifts, but talents and abilities and resources that we have that we can also share. As I think about some of these gifts, certain people come to my mind. When I think about the gift of hospitality, I'm reminded of my very first appointment. I was one of the associate pastors at Christ Church United Methodist in Louisville, Kentucky. And there was a lady there named Trudy Wheeler, and she had the gift of hospitality. She made people feel welcomed and included and involved in whatever was going on. She made space for people to feel at home and safe. And so she started a ministry. She had a passion for people who had experienced cancer. And so she started this Sterling Service Tea Ministry. And so once a quarter, there would be a huge tea in the fellowship hall at the church. And people from all over the community would come who were suffering from cancer, whose loved ones had cancer, and just have a place to sit and to be safe and to share about their hard times. The gift of hospitality. When I think about the gift of helping, which is kind of working behind the scenes, not looking for any credit, but making sure stuff gets done so that the work of ministry can happen, I think of Edgar in the back of our sanctuary. Edgar is, you almost find him always in the kitchen, washing the dishes, making sure things are picked up. You may not know this, but our sign out by the road, Edgar changes it every week to make sure that we get the message that we want to out to the community. Edgar changes light bulbs and fixes things around the church. He's always doing stuff behind the scenes. When I think of the spiritual gift of helping, Edgar comes to mind. And when I think of the spiritual gift of compassion or mercy, well, Sarah Cloud comes to mind. Sarah is a nurse, and so she lives that out in her daily work and daily life, but even beyond that, in so many other ways, with Raise the Roof Academy and going to Africa and caring for the children who were there. When the hurricanes happened a few months ago and places were flooded out, it was Sarah who led the charge saying, we've got to get some flood buckets together to help those folks. Sarah's just can't help but love and care for people who are in need, who are suffering. That is the gift of compassion or mercy. I look out in the congregation and I see so many folks who are gifted in amazing and wonderful ways. Friends, we need to let those gifts come alive. Let those gifts be brought forth into the world to make a difference in people's lives. And we are doing that in so many wonderful ways. And for that, I give thanks. But how do we all live out our gifts in this way? I think Jesus talks a little bit about this in the passage that we've shared. Put yourself in this story. Jesus is walking around in the countryside and a great crowd comes to him. Thousands of people, it says. And we can imagine what life is like for that crowd. They're just normal, everyday folks living in the first century under Roman rule. They are oppressed and they are just trying to get by. They're farmers, fishermen, builders, carpenters, doing whatever they can just to put food on the table and care for their families. We can imagine how anxious and worried they are about life. They don't know what's going to come next. They don't know that things will be okay. They work and they strive and they do what they can, but they're not sure. And Jesus speaks into their worries and their anxieties. He reminds them that God knows them and God loves them. Right before our passage, Jesus talks about how you can sell 5 sparrows for 2 pennies. So cheap, almost worthless and meaningless. But he says that God remembers each and every one of those sparrows. Jesus goes on to say that God knows the number of hairs on each of our heads. It's more of a feat for some of us than for others. But the message is that God knows us, knows the details of our lives, and loves us. Jesus talks about the ravens who go flying around and they have all the food that they need. They can find it and gather it and are fed. And the lilies of the field, how beautiful they are clothed in splendor. And Jesus says, how much more important, how much more valuable are we, created in the image of God, the very children of God? Surely God will care for us. Surely God will be with us. Surely God will provide for us. So Jesus says, don't be anxious. Don't worry. God is with you. Set your mind not on those things, not on striving after wealth or resources or security, but set your mind on the things of God. And everything else will be taken care of. As human beings, we have a couple of instincts. One is to grasp at things, and the other is to give. When babies are born, for the first couple of months in their life, all you have to do is touch the palm of their hand, and they will grasp whatever is there. It's a picture of Becca, after she was first born, grasping Nancy's hand. But we are hardwired to grasp what is right in front of us, to wrap our hands around it and hold on as tight as we can. And Jesus says we have to overcome that instinct. We have to learn to let go, to not grasp so hard. Think about some of the Eastern religions like Buddhism and Hinduism, and that is a central truth that they teach that Jesus echoes here as well. That the harder we try to grab, the more that we grasp, the worse things get. But when we learn to let go, when we learn to give what has been given to us, that is when we find freedom. That is when our anxiety can go away. One of my favorite television shows right now is The Goldbergs. I know we have a few fans of The Goldbergs out there. It's about a family of 5 growing up in the 1980s, which, you know, I grew up in the 1980s, so I can appreciate it. But the mother in the story, her name is Beverly. And she has a tendency to smother her children. Sometimes she's called a smother in the story. But she loves them so much, and she wants to protect them and keep them safe, and she just does all that she can to hold them close and to keep them close to her. But the more that she does that, the more she grasps them, the more she holds them close, the farther it drives them away. And this season, her daughter, Erica, has gone off to college. And Beverly's had to learn how to deal with that. And so she's undergoing what she calls a bevolution. She's learning how to let go. And as she does, her daughter actually gets closer to her. She's able to confide in her and to trust her more, knowing that she has this freedom to be who she wants to be, but that her mom is there to love and care and support her. Friends, Jesus is telling us the same thing. We need to learn to let go, to give what we have. And when we do, our worries and anxieties, we can release those. And when we give, it is a blessing to others. Friends, at the end of the service, we'll invite you to turn in your pledge cards, your commitment cards, of how you will support the church over the next year with your prayers, your presence, your gifts, your service, and your witness. How will you give of all of those things to continue God's work in this place and through this community out into the world? Jesus says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. As Matthew plays for us, I invite you to take a few moments to consider what commitment you will make in 2018, to write that on your card, and then during our closing hymn, you'll be invited to bring those forward. But let us spend a few moments reflecting on how God has given so much to us and what we are called to give back this year. Amen.